We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7, The Game.
We're going to take a few calls here before we get to Peter King at 5 o'clock. He had to join us earlier today, a very interesting conversation about what happened in New Orleans, what's happening today in New England about the Patriots being involved in yet another taping scandal. Peter and I and Ray and Matt, we all got into a, like, well, what are you talking about? Isn't that a little bit? I think we're assuming that guilt could be there. The innocent until proven guilty falls on a defer brand of ear when you've been proven guilty in the past. Priors matter. We'll have a very interesting conversation with Peter King. If you missed our interesting conversation today with Christian Fourier, I suggest you check that out. Online, 888-957-9570 is the number. I was at Chase Center last night, gentlemen. I went over to see Ja Morant, who, that guy is going to be real good. And what's really, he is not like cut from a physical brand of cloth that makes you go, oh man, look at that guy. He is going to be that. He's just kind of a normal dude.
Until you see him on a basketball floor.
Wow. What a skill level he has. That guy is going to be really good in this league for a really, really long time. Nobody in Memphis with the Mike Conley jersey is worried that they moved on from Mike Conley for this guy.
Stylistically, this is not an adequate comparison, but he reminds me in some ways of Allen Iverson because he is not physically imposing. But within the confines of how the game is played, he has a wider road that he can travel than just about anybody at that position since him. Just because he does stuff at a higher rate of speed while still being controlled than almost anybody I can remember since him.
It's that part you just said that I think makes the Iverson comparison the most relevant, is the combination of speed and control is wildly impressive. And then he explodes in two-hand dunks on you like he did in the fourth quarter last night, and it's just wow.
What's his name up in Sacramento? Fox?
Fox, yeah. Also fast.
As fast as Allen Iverson, but that's where it ends.
Less control.
That's where it ends.
Well, because it's extraordinarily hard to play controlled and chaotic at the same time. The other guy that I could remember that did that, even though he's a far different body type and used strength a lot more, was Jason Kidd, who thrived more when things were chaotic.
Like the first half of his career, Jason Kidd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that he needed the game almost to be out of control so that he could reestablish his version of control on it.
As a matter of fact, the sort of game the Warriors and Grizzlies played last night where everyone's kicking the ball around was the kind of game that Jason Kidd would have just dominated in the first half of his career.
So I was there last night. I watched it. I got to tell you, there's a better crowd in that building than I actually thought there was going to be. There's a lot of people who still are showing up, and that's good. But the bandwagon is clearly emptied out a little bit, and it's going to get more of that is coming your way before it's all said and done with, because this does get worse before it gets better. I mean, there's just no doubt about that. You could see the frustration boiling over a little bit. Draymond Green dropped an F-bomb last night during the postgame. As about as dobbered down a Steve Kerr as you're going to see after a loss. If Grayson Allen were a Golden State Warrior, he would be a godsend to just the current situation they're in right now. He'd be the starting two guard at the Golden State Warriors. Grayson Allen, who, by the way, you wouldn't really want on your team, but that's where the Warriors are.
You've crossed a line here.
No, but that's it.
Because Grayson Allen
He'd be one of their four best players, period, right
well,
now.
Well, he wouldn't be. You're basing this on what you saw from Grayson Allen last night, and that was maybe the best game of his career.
Yeah, I mean, basically, playing the Warriors last night was basically being graded on a curve.
Yeah, but that said, just saying the 16, 12 minutes, the 12 minutes of Grayson Allen you saw last night would be the Warriors' second best player. That's enough of a condemnation. You know, that's bad enough.
This is the part of the season that I knew was coming when the optimism of seeing new stuff wears off and the realization that they're not even a third of the way through a really hideous season suddenly hits.
You know,
by the middle of January, you'll be clawing your eyes out.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong, but it doesn't have to be like it was last night.
Oh, no, last night was exemplary.
Right. Like, I mean, the thing is, this team can lose 110-102 to the Memphis Grizzlies without looking as horrifying as they did throughout much of the game last night. And I think while certainly we'll be tired of losing 110-102 to the Grizzlies by January, you can stomach it if it doesn't come with embarrassing turnovers and utter sloppiness and laziness from the starting center. And problems that this team has enough problems without creating additional ones for itself.
I want to go back to a saying I've said too many times watching Indiana basketball. I shouldn't need a McDonald's All-American for a box out.
There you go.
Just box somebody out. Like, okay. you can box somebody out if you're the worst guy on the team. You can still do that.
Okay, but I wasn't talking about the fact that they lost by 8 at home to Memphis. They're going to have more games where they look like this.
Yeah, you're probably right.
It's because, one, there is something, even when you're trying to play to establish your career, it becomes disheartening when you look up in the standings on Valentine's Day and you're 11-46. And you just go, this is too hard. This is a grind. And there will be more games like this. And because 82 games is an eternity.
Well, but you know what?
When you're only going to win a quarter of them.
But this is why it does matter that you bring Steph Curry back this year, because that's a light at the middle of the tunnel, right? I mean, and there still may not be a light at the end of the tunnel, but if you're that Warrior, if you're D'Angelo Russell or Eric Paschal or whoever, or Draymond Green in mid-January saying, this is unlivable, I'm so sick of doing this, it's hard to get up for a game on any given night, knowing how bad it is, at least you've got Steph Curry potentially in February and not... Because, I mean, if you didn't, you're literally looking all the way through the 82.
This team can become more visually entertaining. I don't think they can become that more night-in, night-out competitive, even with the return of Steph Curry.
Oh, that's how, sure they can.
Let's hope not, though, because the last thing you need is Steph to reel off 6, 7, 8 wins that knock you out of one of the three worst records and the best chance to get the number one pick in the draft, if that's where this is going.
But there's a difference.
If we're going through hell,
sure,
we might as well come out of it with something worthwhile other than, man, it wasn't any fun at all, and then Steph Curry hit 12 threes for me one night, and I feel better now.
And let me put it this way. The steps will be taken to make sure that Steph Curry's return does not totally derail their draft position. However, there's a wide gap between what we saw last night and 6 or 7 wins in a row.
And look, this really is. I mean, I didn't write this down tritely. This is the worst Warriors team ever. Mm. And that's saying something. That is really saying something. Given who they just were, given what happened and who they are now and what they've got in terms of roster and availability and health, this is the worst Warriors team ever assembled for a season of regular basketball. They're going to have to play at a breakneck pace to get to 23, 24 wins. And, you know, I looked this up. The worst stretch ever for this franchise was between 97 and 2002. Over 5 seasons, they averaged 19.4 wins per year. Their win totals over the 5 years were 19, 21, 19, 17, and 21. Mm. To break... This team could absolutely come in at 18 wins. They're on pace for 17.
I think they'll be in the mid-20s because, again, I do think they'll get a couple extra wins down the stretch. I'm not sure. Oh, God. This is really bad. This team is terrible. You look at a couple of the rosters from that stretch you just described, and I think this team has more talent.
I don't know, man.
If we're counting Russell and Draymond, at least. I mean, a team where Anton Jameson in his second season was your best player and you know, 40-year-old Chris Mullin was coming off the bench, that is rough times.
But at least he was there for 82 games. He wasn't on a two-way.
You're right.
I usually hate absolutes like this is the worst team ever. But statistically right now, it's the worst team ever.
They're terrible.
I don't know how many people believe in that SRS that Basketball Reference uses, which is a simple rating system. This team is worse than the 98 team that went 19-63.
Yep.
And again, this is still a relatively small sample size. This will mean more when we get to 41. But no, this team is awful. And it's not because somebody was incompetent, which makes it all the more frustrating.
Right.
Because you can't really hate anybody.
Yeah.
After 41 games, I will find people.
Yeah, and that number, the SRS is going to go way up because they have not only played without their best four or five players most of the year, they've not only played a reasonably tough schedule game day-wise, they've also just literally been short bodies. I mean, they've been playing with eight guys.
Right. Seven.
Way too often.
Yeah, they're almost like the Detroit Pistons of the early 60s, who won 18 games, and their best player was Terry Dischinger.
Mm.
Right now, they're leader in win shares. Again, another statistic.
This is highly depressing.
Oh, yeah. It's Willie Cauley-Stein.
Who is the worst player on this team.
Correct.
Among them.
No.
Based on what
I'm ready to say.
He is the least inspiring. Let's say that.
That's probably
He is the player that I would be the most in a hurry to get rid of if I was in charge.
Centers from Kentucky.
Not working out great.
Who warned you, baby?
Well, there is the one.
I was excited about him for a minute there. We all were. It was an innocent time.
I was dead wrong. I really thought I thought Willie Cauley-Stein had a chance to be helpful.
I did too.
But you tend to err on the side of optimism because you're a better person than the rest of us.
I was cutting a little optimism off to a wildcat.
Yeah, when you think kind thoughts of people, a puppy dies.
That puts me in a tough spot.
It kind of does. The nicer you are, the worse you are.
Welcome to 5 o'clock, everyone.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco. A radio.com sports station.
We're going to get to this Peter King interview in just a minute, but we have to tell you some other things. We just went over the Warriors a little bit. The San Francisco Giants rebuild is now officially underway. Today, we see some of the levers that Farhan has pulled. The Angels traded Zach Cozart and Will Wilson to the Giants for cash and a player to be named later. Whether you want to say this is a salary dump from the Angels or not, it's probably the right way to approach it. They could be going after Gerrit Cole. They could be going after Rendon. There are big prizes out there for the Angels. Not that a $12 million salary dump is the difference between that and that. But I guess you want to save a little bit of money if you're about to go out and spend a whole lot of money. Anyways, back to the Giants. Will Wilson was a 2019 first-round pick with the Angels, their fourth-best prospect. He has played minor league baseball, a .275 hitter over 46 games, 23 runs, 5 homers, 18 RBI, a prospect. Okay. The Giants are going to pay Cozart his entire $12.67 million salary. There were conflicting reports about that. In eight seasons, he's a .250 hitter. He was an all-star, though, in 2017 when he hit 24 home runs in 122 games with the Reds. He's only played in 96 games over the last two seasons. The Giants then went out and signed right-hander Kevin Gausman to a one-year deal. He is getting $9 million to be the fifth starter. He is a borderline fifth starter bullpen guy. His numbers are inglorious, no matter which way you really want to cut him up or look at him. So I don't know what that means. Also from baseball today, Didi Gregorius to the Phillies, 1 year, $14 million. That's kind of interesting.
That's easily the most interesting thing.
Yeah, I guess he's getting older, but I would have thought he was looking for more security than that.
I don't know that he had much option because the injury last year made people, I think, learier of him. If he had stayed healthy the whole year, the Yankees would have kept him.
But yeah, I think the guy's been pretty convincing.
Yeah, but again, he missed a lot of time.
He did.
And I think that put a red flag on him.
And if you're the Phillies and you can get a potential high-level starter for $14 million on a sort of experimental one-year deal, I think you're thrilled, right?
Well, yeah. And also, you already spent the money on Harper. So you had better be prepared to spend more money
right.
to put people around Harper so that he can be the Harper you're paying. Because the Harper they got last year was not that. And it's not just his fault. It was a team that failed in a bunch of different ways. But if you're signing him and now you're signing Gregorius, you're a team that wants to try to score 950 runs.
Did you know that Didi Gregorius has the sort of like the Dutch equivalent of being like a low-level knighting?
I didn't know the Dutch had knights.
He was awarded the Order of Orange Nassau, fifth class, for his performance for the Dutch national baseball team.
Sir Gregorius?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Why not?
Well,
not bad.
Who was the Giants and Orioles pitcher who was also...
It was Ponson.
Yeah.
Sidney Ponson.
Sir Sidney.
Yeah. But he got it. That was an island, though. I think that was Curacao.
Yeah, but
right?
It was owned by the Dutch.
By the Dutch. That's right.
They hand this stuff out like they're Tootsie Roll Pops.
You get like knighted with Dutch Crunch today. Both of them.
Wait, did you help the lady across the street? Here, have a knighthood.
Knighthood. 888-957-9570. If you are on hold, we're going to talk to you, especially if you want to talk about the Patriots or a little bit about the story of the day. We eventually got to that with Peter King, but of course we began with how good the 49ers were in New Orleans. We're happy to bring you Peter King, 95.7 The Game NFL Insider with NBC Sports, appearing on the Dialpad guest line. Dialpad helps you make smarter calls. Peter is brought to us by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922. Visit friedmansappliance.com today. Peter, thank you for joining us today. How are you, sir?
Everything's going great.
Before we do get to the story du jour, you wrote about it, called it the game of the year, George Kittle making maybe the play of the year. The first 30 minutes of that football game were maybe as good a first half I've ever seen, and I didn't think the second half could live up to the billing. It did. That was outstanding.
Well, I remember I used this as one of my quotes of the week. I've got one TV with the game on, and I've got one TV with Red Zone channel on. And so Scott Hansen, with like 6 minutes left in the half, says, "My God, the Saints and the 49ers have put up 47 points. Look at this." And so I just thought at the end of the night, I said, well, they have 47 more to go after that. And it was an amazing game. And I thought that what was so interesting is I didn't think, and there were obviously some things that I'm sure these defenses would like to have back, but I didn't think this was as much of a case of the defenses playing poorly as it was so many offensive plays being made. I mean, Drew Brees with 5 touchdown passes against the number one defense in the league. Well, maybe not now. But I just thought there were so many things that were offensive plays that were extraordinary. And the Kittle play, when I saw it immediately, I said, Mark Bavaro. And every 49er fan is going to remember that of a certain age, from 1990 when Bavaro had Ronnie Lott hanging on to him for 12 yards while he rambled downfield. But I thought it was just a play that, and I got to talk to Kittle afterwards, I thought there were two incredible things about the play. Number one, just the individual nature of it. It's almost like he got really ticked off when, and he told me he wasn't mad. He said he was actually happy because he knew it would add 15 yards to the play. it looked like he was just ticked off, and once Marcus Williams grabbed his face mask, he was just said, okay, I'll show you guys. I'm going to carry you as far as I can. And it took 3 guys to bring him down. But the other thing about it I thought was memorable is that, you know, and this is something that I doubt has gotten its fair share of play, and maybe it should get more of it. But I thought it was really cool how Kyle Shanahan basically took a timeout at the absolute last millisecond before they would have gotten a delay of game and before the play would have come off with George Kittle likely being covered by a cornerback one-on-one on the far right side of the field. It was a 2-by-2 formation, two receivers on the left, two on the right. And at the last moment, Kyle Shanahan thought, not a smart play. We are making a change right here, right now. And what was interesting about it is it's obvious that Kyle Shanahan knew exactly what he wanted to do because he called the play almost immediately into Jimmy Garoppolo's headset. He did not Garoppolo didn't go to the sideline, and Shanahan did not wait long at all. And afterwards, I was asking Kittle about it, and Kittle said, hey, Jimmy just looked at me and he said, hey, you're getting the ball. You better win. In other words, I'm going to throw it out there. You better win. You're going to have to get at least 2 yards. We, you know, think of how much was at stake in this game. Just think about it. Because if they don't convert the fourth down, they lose this game 46-45. And regardless of the fact that the Seahawks lost on Sunday night, the more important aspect of this is it just makes it so much more difficult for San Francisco to beat Seattle in the NFC West. And if you don't beat Seattle in the NFC West, obviously that means you're going to be the fifth seed and you're going to have 3 road games to play if you want to get to the Super Bowl. So there was so much riding on that play, and it wasn't just Kittle. It was Kyle Shanahan having almost an instantaneous, hey, we got to do this, thinking about it, making the call, and immediately calling it into Garoppolo's head.
Let me jump onto the Garoppolo part of it, too, because we've heard all about the guy's leadership in his short time with the team. And I guess what my curiosity is, do you feel like your idea of who Jimmy Garoppolo is has changed over the last 3 to 5 weeks? Or did you kind of always... Okay, go ahead.
Well, I mean, honestly, to be honest, I was worried about him at the end of the Seattle game. I just thought that he had some very, very tight moments at the end of that game in which he wasn't really playing athletically. He was playing what looked to be like he was playing tight. And he definitely was not that the other day when they needed him. At the most important moments of that game, he came through. And you know what Tom Brady always does? And again, I'm not comparing him to Tom Brady. I'm just saying he played with Tom Brady for a long time. What Tom Brady always does is he plays in the biggest moments of the game like it's a preseason game in August. It's just normal football. The moment is never too big for him. And, you know, as Kittle told me after the game, he said, hey, you know, we couldn't hear anything the whole day. Basically, it's just pandemonium in there. And just think, you have to play in that environment, in that atmosphere. And it was every moment that they needed to make a play. I mean, not everyone, but almost everyone. Garoppolo came through. And, hey, to put up 48 points in the Superdome in a game you absolutely had to have. That's gigantic, obviously.
What did New Orleans get out of this? I mean, because it's not a moral victory. Did they get anything that they can use in their final 3 games or the postseason, or is this just a zero-sum loss for them?
I think it's a zero-sum loss. I think there's a lot of depressing things that came out of this game for New Orleans. Namely that the biggest one is that they're not sure in a very big moment that their defense can really stop people because they sure didn't stop them the other day. And I think also, look, I'd be very encouraged by Drew Brees. It's probably the best game he's had since he came back from his hand injury or thumb injury. But I was never really doubting Drew Brees. I just felt that in the previous month, he just was, you know, he wasn't fully there. He wasn't 100%. So I don't know, Ray. I think that I thought Sean Payton sounded both the day, an hour, 15 minutes after the game and the next day, pretty depressed and pretty down about what happened. And, you know, who knows why? I know that there were some calls in the game that the Saints were incensed about, but that happens every day and to every team. And but no, I don't think there's a lot to be encouraged about for the Saints.
The story du jour is obviously what has happened once again with the New England Patriots here. And, you know, you talked about how Tom Brady plays huge moments with all the confidence of a dude in a meaningless preseason game. Maybe that's because they know what's coming. Look, I don't want to rob the Patriots of all their accomplishments, but I don't think I can attach all their accomplishments to hard work and a know-how attitude anymore. Like, the team that gets caught red-handed for the third time in a row probably is doing something, right?
Wait a minute. So you're automatically right now assuming that the Patriots' story, their cover story, is full of crap.
Well, why would we assume anything but that? Why would we assume anything but that?
But I wouldn't think you should assume anything, but I mean, I'm a journalist.
Right.
I don't know if it's right or wrong. All I know is that let's see. Let's see what happens. Let's see when the investigation comes out. Let's see who these guys are, how long they've been with the Patriots, what their background is, whether they had any nefarious intent. Let's see. We don't know that right now. As of right now, you know, I'm sitting on the sidelines. I'm saying, okay, NFL's investigating it. I want to know what's on the tape, and then we'll figure out what it is. But I think it's really unfair right now at this moment to say, put the gavel down, they're guilty. I don't know if they're guilty.
Fair enough.
I don't think it's fair to automatically close the case and say it's over. They did it again.
Well, but you know, today I saw Judy Batista. She was saying that the NFL is going to lean towards taking the Patriots at their word, and you know, it's just this is going to go away quickly, and there's probably going to be nothing attached to it. And it sounds like this is. How about, let me turn around and ask, what if this really is, oh my God, intentional, corrupt, they were filming signals, it's Spygate Part 2, no doubt about it. Who would even do anything about it? I mean, let me ask you
this question. Don't you think it's a little bit strange that New England Patriots employees with Patriots gear being accredited by the Cleveland Browns in the press box for everyone to see? Don't you think that that's a little bit strange to then think that, yep, this is how the Patriots spy on the opposition?
I mean, hiding in plain sight is a strategy.
And here's the other question I would ask you. And again, we'll see what happens. We'll see. I don't know what the real story is. But if the Detroit Lions, or I won't use them because they have a former Patriots coach, but if the Cincinnati Bengals did the exact same thing and were found to be taping in the New England press box last week, and the Patriots said, "Whoa, what are you guys doing with this camera here?" And this happened. I mean, would anybody automatically think seriously that the Cincinnati Bengals had come to Gillette Stadium to tape the New England Patriots to spy on them in advance of a game next week?
You know what, Peter?
Only one team that we would think that about.
I'm not sure. I think at this point, knowing that the Patriots did it, if someone's videotaping the opponents, I would assume that they're trying to cheat, actually.
I mean, I just think that's crazy. I think that is lunacy. I mean, you think that a smart team would do that in plain sight for 300 members of the media to look at and for scouts from other teams to look at?
If they thought there were no consequences, why not?
In the NFL?
If I can walk out in the middle of 7th Avenue and shoot anyone and get away with it, why wouldn't I?
What does that mean?
No, I'm saying that the New England Patriots have done this time and time again. The consequences have...
They've done it twice, and they have gotten nailed to the cross.
Well...
And that's why, you know, to say there were no consequences is not correct.
There were consequences, I mean, that did not prevent them from continuing to dominate the league at a previously unseen.
You're assuming that they have kept doing it, and I don't know that they haven't. But that's a pretty strong thing to say, that we know they're doing it, we just can't catch them. I assume that that's what you're thinking.
Well, look, I'm not. I just want to look. Eventually, Occam's razor is a theory that some people subscribe to. And what the New England Patriots have done over the course of two decades is push out success data points, Peter, that are so abstract to the NFL norm that we've said, you know, is Bill Belichick the greatest of all time? Is Tom Brady the greatest of all time? These are legitimate questions.
Yeah.
And I think that asking about, you know, what mechanisms did they use to push these data points and success to the point of it's unrecognizable. So far out, maybe there's something there. Maybe there something
might be,
there.
And I all and what and, you said at the beginning.
Right, but
at the beginning, you sort of said that we all know that they did it and all that. Or I mean, that's what I was taking you saying. And you're right. But I guess I would look at this and I would say, look, it is just like in America. What's the phrase you're taught when you're 5 years old, 6, 7 years old? In our country, you're innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
The Patriots were proven guilty in 2007, right? And then I'm not sure what was actually proven by the Brady case, but they certainly came down on them like they were absolutely unequivocally.
I mean, but priors matter too. Like, innocent until proven guilty is one thing, but priors matter. You say, what if the Bengals did it? Well, the Bengals would be doing it, to my knowledge, for the first time ever. This could be a third go-around, and if there is, you know, what would be the – let's just suspend reality and join me on my conclusion that, okay, so they're caught. It's actual red-handed. We've proven it. There's no doubt about it. They're caught. What then? Like, stripping draft picks didn't do it?
That's a good question. If they're proven – if this is – provable, and it's proven that Belichick had clear knowledge of this most idiotic Don Knotts scheme in the history of subterfuge. If it's proven that he had something to do with it or he was behind it, the NFL should come down extremely hard on him. No question about it. But I mean, can we wait more than a day to send them to the electric chair?
Of course.
But I think the question actually is less should and more can and would the NFL come down on them?
I don't know. I mean,
how would
you're
they?
You're asking a question when something just happened 24 hours ago. And as I say, if it's proven that Belichick is the brains behind this idiotic scheme, if that's proven, then the NFL has to come down very hard.
Has it
How
been
hard is very hard? I don't know.
But
I
Peter, it's
I'm
it,
just thinking
it,
about it now.
You know, it has been proven that Bill Belichick has been the brains behind all the schemes. I mean, the closet of videotapes that he used to have that the NFL destroyed. I mean, who is policing the New England Patriots? When do you think the last time somebody before a game kicked off checked the pressure in a football?
I mean, I don't know. But the pressure in a football right now is checked before every game by the officiating crew, and it has to, every one of the balls has to fall between a certain range, and they do not allow home teams control of the footballs anymore. So if the pressure in the football is different, that's not the fault of the New England Patriots, it's the fault of the NFL.
Well, that's good. Then they can, you know, to me, I would put a guy in a press box because it is so stupid. It's plausible deniability. I mean, it really is. I'm a big believer in, you know, and Bill Belichick wants to say.
And they haven't been doing this all year. This is the first time they've done it. And so they just decided last week, hey, listen, we got to do something. We're so bad this year, we need to pull out all the stops and cheat our asses off. I think it is the most nonsensical thing I've ever heard. To think that you believe that Bill Belichick asked people to do this in plain sight.
I know that Bill Belichick told people.
I'm mind-boggled by this.
Their marching orders in the past were answers to give to people who caught them. Why wouldn't Bill Belichick do that again? He gave everybody marching orders. Here's what happens if you get caught. You say you did this, 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 and this.
Right. Yeah, I mean, look, it might be true. It might be true. But I prefer to wait longer than 24 hours to give them a death sentence.
On a more practical note, because I think we probably said everything we need to do on this. How much trouble are the Patriots in as a football team right now?
Well, they can't do anything right now on offense, Ray. I wrote on Monday that they have to become a gadget offense because their running game is 1 yard per carry worse than it was a year ago when it was good and not great. And they don't have any threat in the passing game. Even Julian Edelman, he's getting doubled all the time. They don't have any threats on their offense anymore. And so, you know, they have to think of 6 or 8 gadget plays a game, call 4 or 5 of them, and just try to win that way. I don't see any way that they win playing normal lineup and try to beat you football. We've been watching the same thing for months, and it's just not working. So I think that's their only chance to win games in January.
Speaking, so if that's the case, I sorry to interrupt. If that's the case, is the AFC now Baltimore, Kansas City, I don't know? Or are they still get credit for being muscle memory?
But somebody still is going to have to beat them, as you know. So, somebody's going to have to come into Foxborough and beat them. So until that happens, I don't know. I'd be a little hesitant to throw dirt on them yet, but from what I've seen, they certainly don't look like a very good team, and I'd be very surprised if they could turn it around.
I tell you what, Peter, thank you very much for joining us again this week. I'll reel in my suspicion a little bit. I'd like to see you extend your suspect nature towards this, because I think there might be something here, man.
Why do we have to do anything, right? But the question is, why do we have to do anything right now? Let's let the story develop. That's all I'm saying. I'm not thinking they're innocent. I'm not thinking they're guilty. All of us, but I'm not certainly jumping to the conclusion that they must be guilty because they've done it before. And doing it in a Keystone Cops way like this is ridiculous. I think.
Thank you for joining us again, Peter. Have a good night.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
That was Peter King earlier today. Very interesting conversation. And, you know, him saying, let's wait and see what happens. Like, I get it. I really do. Innocent until proven guilty. This is a concept that, believe me, I do support. I'm also a believer in fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me a third time, well, that's back on you, jackasses. Like, that's usually where that goes. So we'll see what happens. And, you know, people on the text line are saying, well, what's supposed to happen here? Are we supposed to pull a draft pick? That's already happened. Didn't stop it. Da, da, da. I think the indefinite suspension of Bill Belichick, should he be found guilty of doing this, is something that is an avenue I would like to see explored. A bridge too far for some people. To me, not far enough. If he's really doing this again, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I'm not a Patriot hater, but come on, man. Come on. So, red-handed is our Tuesday trifecta topic this afternoon, and I'm going to invite you to give us a call right now for the Tuesday trifecta. 888-957-9570. Are you ready? Red-handed is the topic. Question number one. What percentage of the Patriots' success would you attribute to the cheating we know about? not what this might be, but what we know about. What percentage of their success, again, it's certainly not 100, but it's clearly not zero either. What percentage of Patriots' success would you attribute to their bending the rule book nature, if you will? Question number two. This is going to be a little complicated. Question number two, when does the concept of if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, cross your line? Where is your line? What crosses the if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying line to the point where you say, well, wait a minute, that's cheating. You can't do that. And then our third question, everyone loves a draft. Cheater draft. Mm-hmm. And you can take that any way you want. Whatever cheater you want to bring up, however they cheated, whatever walk of life they cheated from, a cheater draft. That's what we've got for you today. 888-957-9570 is the number. 888-957-9570. If you're looking for a handy-dandy, easy-to-use call-in segment, man, is this it. It is the Tuesday Trifecta. Ask for it by name, except no substitute. Red-handed is our topic today. What percentage of the Patriots' success would you attribute to cheating? Question number two, when does, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, cross your line in the sand? Finally, cheater draft. You get to pick your favorite cheater. From the world of business, finance, sports, marriage, politics, whatever. Cheater draft. Everyone loves a good cheat. We got one coming up. 888-957-9570. This segment sponsored by Brown & Tolan. Brown & Tolan physician doctors know you, know the best care for you because they take the time to get to know you. With over 2,700 primary care and specialty physicians working in seven Bay Area counties, you're sure to find the best doctor for you. Visit brownandtoland.com today. It is the Tuesday Trifecta. Red-handed is our topic. We'll have the three questions and your calls coming up next. 888-957-9570. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game.
The holiday shopping season is here, people, and this year your gift can start next year's good habit. Quip is something that's sure to put a smile on everyone's mouth because it's dental care they'll actually want to use every day. That's why Quip is the perfect, thoughtful, and practical gift with an electric toothbrush, refillable floss, and toothpaste, all designed intentionally to make good habits simple. The Quip electric toothbrush has sensitive sonic vibrations and a timer with 30-second pulses to guide your routine. Plus, the Quip floss dispenser has pre-marked strings so you always use the right amount. Quip also delivers brush heads, floss, and toothpaste refills every 3 months, so join over 3 million happy customers, including me, Matt Kolsky, and check everyone off your gift list right now with Quip at getquip.com/2019. Just go to getquip.com/2019 to save on gift sets or to get your first refill free with a refill plan. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/2019.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome, welcome. So we invite you all in for a little Tuesday Trifecta. It's officially Ray Ratto's favorite segment of the week because it means he does the least amount of talking all week long. Ray, are you into this?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. 888-957-9570 is the number. Are we ready? Go ahead, Nash. Give him the open.
And suddenly over the loudspeaker, I heard...
Trifecta.
Triple.
Trifecta.
With a triple.
Trifecta.
It's the Tuesday Trifecta. One topic, three questions. Now, here's Damon Bruce.
Welcome, welcome. Your Tuesday Trifecta is here. Our topic today, red-handed. We begin with Eric in San Jose. Eric, thank you for being our guinea pig this afternoon. The first question is, what percentage of the Patriots' success do you attribute to the cheating they've been caught?
I'd say very low, 10%.
10%. 10% is... I don't know if that's a bigger number or not. I don't know.
You know what? I'm that's about where I am in the 5-15% range, and I think that range is both small enough to remind us that these guys are good and big enough to remind us that this stuff matters.
Yeah. When does if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, cross your personal line, Eric?
Astros.
Banging on garbage cans is where you draw the line.
Say that again.
Banging on garbage cans is where you draw the line.
That's where I draw the line.
There it is. You get the first pick in the cheater draft, Eric. Who you taking?
Astros, of course. I'm a Dodgers fan.
Astros it is. If you're a Dodger fan, you got to be chapped about that. So we'll take it. They certainly are baseball's celebrity cheater of the year. Yeah, congratulations to them. Thank you very much. Chris is in San Leandro. Chris, you're on 95.7 The Game. What percentage of the Patriots' success would you attribute to the cheating?
Let's do 12%, TB12.
TB12, thank you very much. When does, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, cross your line?
If it's not going my way, if the cheating's against me, then it's crossing the line.
There you go. So when you're the victim.
That's the correct answer.
That's an honest answer, at least.
It's very honest, Chris. Thank you. You get the second overall pick in the cheaters draft. Only the Houston Astros are off the board. What are you doing?
I could go with a lot of sports athletes, but I'm going to go with my guy. Rest in peace. He lies. He cheats. He steals. It's my guy, Eddie Guerrero.
Eddie Guerrero.
Wow.
Thank you very much. Wrestler?
Wrestler.
Yeah.
I didn't know where Eddie Guerrero died. Was it the...
No, he's a while back. He's okay. Been dead.
Yeah, he's old hat.
2005 passed away.
Wait, was he the young, like the guy, the 619? Is it like the luchador?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, no, wait, the frog splash Eddie Guerrero? God, I have not been up on wrestling for years. I don't
Member of the Guerrero wrestling family.
Oh, he's on the list now, too. That's sad. Rodney in San Francisco, thank you very much for the call, Rodney. What percentage of the Patriots' success would you attribute to the cheating they've been caught red-handed doing?
So 6 Super Bowls, 2 Gates, I'd say 33%.
Thank you very much. When does, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, cross your line?
Just when you get into physically hurting somebody past the point of participation.
Cheater draft, you have the third overall pick. What do you got?
I'm surprised he's here. Barry Bonds.
Yeah, I can't believe he wasn't first or second off the board.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Really, thank you very much, Rodney.
Local hero and the best cheater ever, maybe?
Hey, the
respect, Barry.
The correct way to do steroids is to take it to the grave. That's the every process comes with a last step. The last step in a successful steroids regimen is you die with it.
That's coming from a new father, kids.
I'm going to teach him young. All right, we move on to Carlos in San Bruno. Carlos, thank you very much. Good to have you on here. What percentage of Patriot success do you attribute to their cheating?
I think at least one Super Bowl.
When does, if you're not cheating, you ain't trying, officially cross the line?
I think when it has to do with enhancing your body, so steroids.
Cheater draft, you have the fourth overall pick.
Bill Clinton.
Ooh, thank you very much. I'll take it. No one's going to argue with that. Thank you very much. Although impeachment used to be downright charming compared to what we used to do it for.
Seriously.
Do want to correct here. Rey Mysterio was the 619 that I was thinking of. Rey Mysterio, thank you. Not Eddie Guerrero. Latino Heat, Eddie Guerrero. The frog splash, Eddie Guerrero. I do remember that. Jose in San Leandro. Thank you very much, Jose. What percentage of the Patriots' success do you attribute to their cheating?
Say by 30.
When does, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, cross your line?
Steroids.
Cheater draft, fifth overall pick.
Lance Armstrong.
That's a good one, too.
I didn't think we were going to wait to number 5 to see Mr. Armstrong, but there indeed. He is, I tell you, to this day, if you want to start your Tour de France steroid investigation, the medal platform is the only place to begin it. Guys finish 1, 2, 3. They're the only ones I'm sure were on steroids. The rest of the field that didn't win, maybe. RT, thank you very much. RT in Walnut Creek, what percentage of Patriot success do you attribute to cheating?
I'm going to say 18% as a Charger fan. That's that one Super Bowl they got.
When does? If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Cross the line.
I think anytime an off-field person is using technology to communicate with the team.
Cheater draft. Sixth overall pick. Who you taking?
I think anybody who takes steroids to punch somebody in the head. So I'm going to pick Brock Lesnar as my choice for that one.
Brock Lesnar. I never really had him associated with. I don't know enough about UFC fighting. I don't care.
I don't know that he ever tested positive, but I think there was rife suspicion for good reasons.
All right, we're almost running out of time here. Let's take the final three, and then we'll get Ray and Matt's contribution to the trifecta. Damon Frog Splash was Rob Van Dam. There were a lot of frog splashers in the history of wrestling, but thank you very much. Duke in the City. How you doing, Duke?
I'm good. King of the Sports Mike, Damon Bruce, the great Matt Koski, and Ray Rattle. Turn on your damn mic.
It's phenomenal, isn't it? Good to have you on always, Duke. What percentage of Patriots' success do you attribute to their cheating?
I got a roll with the with Matt Costa and the other fella that called. I was about 5 to 10%. Most of the people that they beat because they were pretty much better than them, and all that stuff that they was doing, they've been doing. They didn't even have no reason to do it. It was really kind of like nonsense. So, but like 5 to 10%.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. That's the saying. So when does it cross the line?
You know what, D. Bruce? I played a lot of pickup basketball games and played a lot of sports in my life playing basketball and stuff. And I hear a lot of other guys talking about major league stuff, but I'm gonna keep it on the level of playing pickup games. When a team know that they're gonna lose and you try to cheat to win because you know the team is better than you, that's what kills me. Like they try to boost their points up or do stuff like that. Ain't no need for that because the Dukes don't need to cheat to win. If if you got it, you got it. If you don't, you don't. Don't try to cheat to win, fellas. Play earnest.
Be more like Duke, not Mike Krzyzewski's, but ours here in the city. Honest. Absolutely. I like that, cheater draft. You have the 7th overall pick, Duke. Who you taking?
I got a good one for y'all, man. I don't know why nobody picked this. I got to go with old Jeb Bush. Who uses dead people to win votes, man? If that ain't cheating, I don't know what the hell is.
Thank you very much. I'll take it.
Very unfamiliar with Chicago politics.
Yeah, seriously. That's
That was years ago.
It's called Thursday in Chicago.
Like at least 15 years ago. In Chicago.
Ange in Oakland, still basking in a Baltimore win 2 weeks ago. How you doing, Ange?
Hey, I'm good, man. Just got a fresh jersey from Baltimore from my people. It's a nice Lamar jersey. It's going to look beautiful on me Thursday.
Did you go with the black one or the purple?
Hey, easy, Tim Ryan. Oh, excuse me. Go ahead.
I got the black with the purple trim on the number 8 and stuff.
I like
it. No, it's that I'm sorry, Ms. Jackson. I've just been listening to Outkast, man, since the game. That's all I listen to.
What percentage of the Patriots' success would you attribute to their cheating?
Man, I give them an AFC championship or something, man. Them boys been good, man. Shit.
That's the way. Oh, Ange.
That's a heartbreak.
All right, so we can't take any more calls because Ange spoiled the punch for everybody in the punch bowl. But that's a casual swear. That was a very uncomfortable talking to you.
This is the problem that happens sometimes when you develop a relationship with a caller so he feels like he's in his living room when he's on the air.
The truth is, Ray is so disarming that it just makes people so comfortable.
That's true. Ray, or alternatively, Ray makes people swear for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, there's that too.
As long as they do it away from me.
All right, so while we're waiting for our delay to build back up, and we'll take one or two more, Albie. No more new calls, you know what I mean? Oh, Albie's saying, go ahead. All right, it's your job. Jacob, San Jose. Jacob, thank you very much for calling the Tuesday Trifecta. What percentage of the Patriots' success do you attribute to their cheating?
I'm going to go high here. I have to say 50%.
Wow.
50% because, one, you have to know the play, and then you have to execute the play. It's a 50-50.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. So when's that concept cross the line?
Once they say you're wrong, you continue doing it. Yep, cross the line.
Cheater draft. You get the 8th overall pick.
Got to keep it with the topic. We're still Patriots there.
You're going Patriots.
Yeah, why not? Yeah,
but Patriots should absolutely make the list. Absolutely. Thank you very much. This is Robert in San Jose. Robert, percentage of success attribute to cheating. What is it?
Two
of the Super Bowls that the Patriots won, I think I've been cheated related.
When does? If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Officially cross the line.
The moment you get caught cheating, you should be suspended.
Everything. Yeah. Yeah, oh, there should definitely be more punitive damage for those caught. No doubt about it. Cheater draft, ninth overall pick, Robert. What are you taking?
I'm sorry, I'm going to get a little controversial here. I think the transgender women that compete as women, I think that there's a disadvantage. They should compete on their own competition.
Robert?
Not sure that's part of the draft.
Robert? Love you. Thank you. Not touching that answer with a 10-foot pole.
Eek.
But I hear you. There are it's just ain't worth it. It's not worth it. It's a full when my internal editor says, "Eh, you punt." Robert, thank you very much. This is Robert from Oakland. Robert, what percentage of the Patriots' success would you attribute to cheating?
Oh, I guess Robert's gone.
Well, then that's it. We're going to wrap up with Ben in San Mateo. Ben, percentage of Patriots success cheating, what?
I'm not sure what it is, but their total margin of victory in their six Super Bowl wins is like, what, 14 points? So even if it's razor thin, you know, it may have made a difference in those games, right? Yeah,
absolutely. If you're not cheating, you're not trying. That's the theory anyways. When does it cross the line?
Well, I think in the Patriots' case, it's when you're winning and when it seems systemic, which it does, maybe.
Cheater draft, ninth overall pick. What do you got for us?
Maybe a tie between Trump, if he hasn't been mentioned, and maybe the Patriot ball boys from Deflategate.
The deflators.
Yeah, and how about this? We'll just go people with balls. Thank you very much, Ben. Appreciate that. All right, Ray? What percentage of cheating would you attribute to the Patriots' success?
3, and that's high. I should probably say 2. They're winning those games anyway.
When is, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, officially a bridge too far?
When it results in a bad beat for you. Like if you're covering and somebody pulls a fast one and all of a sudden you aren't covering anymore, That's wrong.
Is there a cheater you would like to put on the draft board?
Oh, Arnold Rothstein.
Dang it, Ray.
The granddaddy of them all.
Yeah. How do you not?
He should have been first, third, and sixth.
Arnold Rothstein.
He's the one.
You rig a World Series, you go down in history.
He's the one, and he's the one I wanted to say, but there are a few good answers on the text line. My favorite, Rosie Ruiz.
Is that the woman who jumped into the marathon?
That's right. The marathon cheater. That is a great one.
I don't believe that's cheating. I think it's rational to run a race for 4 miles while everybody else is running 26.2. For 26.
It is rational. It is also cheating.
Shout out to my buddy Flanders, not Ned, another Flanders, who said Milli Vanilli.
That's great.
Milli Vanilli in the cheating draft. Very nice.
I love the Milli Vanilli call. I also love that album, Blame It on the Rain. Yeah, yeah. Couple other good text line answers. Patrick Reed, you remember that?
Yeah.
I think it was just last year, right?
Yeah, he got in a jam again just recently.
Too. Uh-huh. And then...
jog my memory. Patrick Reed, who?
The golfer.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then Sammy Sosa, the corked bat.
Corked bat.
Oh, Albert Bell's corked
Albert
bat
Bell's
was better
was
than
probably
that.
Worse, yeah.
Tanya Harding?
That's a good one. That's a very good one.
That's really not cheating. That's more of assault.
It was an attempt at cheating.
It was, yeah.
It's looking
to eliminate the competition.
It's sort of, in a way, it's a little bit on the side of Arnold Rothstein's form of cheating.
We also got the Russian Olympic Federation mentioned a couple times, and they've tried hard over the years. So
well, they just got banned for 4 more years, which, after you convert it from euros to dollars,
is like
will be six weeks.
An awful lot of people are saying, what about Tiger Woods?
Hey, it's Tiger. He's doing a huge favor.
Look, he cheated on his wife, but I don't think he's ever cheated the game of golf.
My wife went through my phone.
Yeah, she did.
He's never used a hand wedge in a tournament that we know of.
Mark Zuckerberg stole a website and made billions of dollars. Nice job by the 408 there.
Robert Kraft uses the hand wedge.
Vanilla Ice. If you're talking about theft, that's a good one.
Yeah.
The text line. See, this is why I read the text line, Ray.
Pete Rose. A lot of Pete Rose on there.
But he didn't cheat, did he?
No, he didn't cheat. He bet on his own team, sometimes not to necessarily win.
Yeah. So when does the, if you're cheating, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, cross your line? To me, it's when management does it. It's when the guy who claims to be in charge or the moral authority or the compass of truth for any team is the guy doing it. Players, I'm not going to say I get it, but I can wrap my mind around a rogue individual doing anything I can to hold on to this paycheck for as long as I can. Like, to me,
is a third base coach management?
See, this is where I would not say management. I would use the words you'd use later. When it's not an individual.
When it's systemic.
An individual cheating, like, okay. When it becomes an organized cheating effort, that's where you cross the line for me.
Maybe if it might be easier to just say non-uniformed personnel.
Or that too. But even if it was like a group of six players who got together to create an elaborate scheme, even that is going too far for me.
If Ron Wotus hooks signs, that's fine. Just because he's wearing a uniform when he's studying. If he's stealing signs from other teams when he's in his civilian clothes, he needs a hobby.
Yeah.
To me, if you're stealing signs with your naked eyes, that's in play, man. That is part of Major League Baseball. I am supposed to be looking at your catcher from second base. What the hell do you think I'm doing out here?
Like, what if you're naked?
Well, then I don't think that's a baseball question. But
well, it could be.
This is when you involve technology, when you got a guy who ain't on the team doing the work to try to get information for the team. Hi, I'm a guy with a telescope sitting in the center field scoreboard, that to me is you've officially pushed it.
Yeah, it's no longer a guy trying to get an edge in his job. It's a guy whose whole job is to try to get an edge for other people.
Me using my side eye to steal your catcher's signs, that's gamesmanship.
So binoculars are technology?
Absolutely they are. Anything that's not part of the human body is technically technology. And I've always said, if you really want to talk about performance-enhancing drugs, what do you think has helped more home runs be hit in Major League Baseball in the past 20 years? Steroids or LASIK eye surgery?
It's an interesting question.
Well, it's interesting because there are steroids that actually, one, help cure glaucoma and actually enhance your eyesight. So
I know something else that helps cure glaucoma, and I'm actually about to go home and check it out. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Weed, Ray, weed.
Yeah, I know that's what you think you meant.
I want to invite everybody out to the Guardsman Tree Lot tomorrow. Yeah. We're going to be there. It's a great time to come out and get all your holiday needs taken care of. One stop, we're going to be giving away some trees, some wreaths, some holiday merriment for all. Ray Ratto will be signing babies.
I'm giving away poison sumac.
Good times. Good times. Thank you very much for tuning in. Thanks to Peter King, to Christian Fourier for joining us, to everyone who called in for the Tuesday trifecta. Nash, thank you. Albie, thank you. Ray and Matt, always a pleasure. Sports don't build character, they reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.